This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Blunders on the bases for somebody as fast as he is and plays subpar defense. I already know what Ji-Hwan Bae gives me as a Pirates fan. And, you know, you see relievers that are pretty underwhelming. You know David Bednar's had a rough spring. You realize that they are counting on Ke Bryan Hayes' back to stay healthy, that they might end up using Jared Triolo somewhat regularly at first base, a guy who is offensively a complete void out there and has proven to be one. We know what Jared Triolo is. He's an elite glove with very little to offer in the way of the bat. Knowing that that guy is likely to get significant at bats this year, problematic. On a perfect team, on a well-constructed team, I should say. Well-constructed team. What's Jared Triolo? Defensive late inning replacement? I mean, he's playing once every 10 days as a starter. Somebody needs a day off, put Triolo in. At bare minimum, we know he's going to be great with the glove wherever
like
we put him.
Like a Doug Minkiewicz type.
That might be disrespectful to Minkiewicz, believe it or not, offensively at least. I mean, he's a guy you put in there on a really good roster, on a deep roster. Every 10th day or so, he gets a start. Somebody needs a blow, you throw him in there because you know he can play any position. And or you use him as a defensive specialist in the last three innings of a game when you have the lead. The Pirates are going to probably rely on him for what? 300 plus plate appearances? Like,
I would agree with all of that, but the sad truth is he's not that much worse offensively than the guy at third base they paid big money to.
Donnie, I know.
Big money by their standards.
I know, man. I know that you're like merely saying that to offer a slight counterpoint, but like it doesn't really make me feel good. All you're saying is, yeah, he's bad, but you know what? The other guy is too. Let me put it this way. In year two for this team, there should not be so many hopes pinned on can Ke Bryan Hayes's, like year two for this team with Skeens, I should say. Not year two, you know what I meant. In year two of the we have Paul Skeens window, I see way more, or I think about it, and I think way more is dependent on will Ke Bryan Hayes's back hold up, right? Will Bailey Falter be good? Can they survive till Bubba Chandler gets here? Will Bubba Chandler be really good off the jump? Is Jared Jones's arm just a setback and not a catastrophe? There are way more unanswered questions than I would want there to be. They had money to try and go out and buy players to patch holes in free agency, and they did not do that. There were other options out there. Instead, what they did was, really, I would argue, a similar version of what we've seen. They tried to do it in the most cost-efficient way possible. deal from a position of strength. We're not going to apply money to solve the problem.
That's where I think this season, and I'm not saying that none of these guys are open or closed to criticism, but when it comes to the power structure that is the Pittsburgh Pirates, we know that everybody is going to yell at the man at the top. But then after that, it's Ben Cherington. And then I think there's a large drop-off before you get to Derek Shelton, where, yeah, Shelton has his shortcomings as a manager. He has points in his in-game managing that can be better, and he doesn't always click the right buttons. But when you go to the analogy, like the grocery shopping analogy that we hear in sports, the poor guy is trying to make spaghetti without any sauce, given what the Pirates are, you know, giving him to work with. It's a lot of just the same guys in the organization's hope of, well, this guy will absolutely progress. He will be a better player than he was last season. That doesn't always happen. In fact, with this group, with this team in particular, it's often the other way around. We see guys slip through the cracks in a positive light, whereas other organizations, successful organizations in baseball, we see guys slip through the cracks in a negative light. You think of the ones that have success all the time. The Dodgers are a little bit tough to use in this scenario because they buy so much from the outside.
They also always have a great farm system.
Yeah, they're always loaded. They're like fourth in the league.
That's the problem. It shouldn't work that way.
But think of a team like the Atlanta Braves.
Mm-hmm.
Everything seems to go right for them. For a while, the St. Louis Cardinals, everything seems to go right for them. They call up a guy you've never heard of. He's hitting 335.
Correct.
And with the Pirates, it's like so. It feels so rare for fans to be able to cling to a player that truly works out.
Skeens is an obvious one. I mean, I think Reynolds has worked out for them, but like there's so few examples, as you say, of it happening routinely. And it, you know, you talk about how they didn't have, you know, he's trying to make pasta without the sauce. I also think that there's just a fundamental distrust at the highest levels of that organization. I think Bob Nutting is, it's like double whammy. He didn't like the job Cherington did last year. Like, to whatever degree, Bob, I think, gets fired up about the team. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say I think he's catatonic. I think he does want to win. Like most of these guys, I think he wants to win on his terms as an owner. I think he probably saw Cherington make moves and was like, well, you didn't do a very good job. And I would imagine Bob was probably pretty fed up. And it feels like something did not happen that maybe should have. There should have just been a divorce. The owner says, I got to blow you out of here. I got to take the manager, send him packing too. And yes, I'm going to hire a GM who might have a different vision. But it should have been pretty easy to say, do you want to be the GM of this team if you've never been one before, maybe? We have Paul Skeens. We expect to compete immediately. So whatever your vision is, make sure it kind of dovetails nicely with that. You would think you'd have assistant GM, guys who are ready to move up, you know, clamoring, but they didn't do that. And so then they're in this that weird purgatory, Donnie, where the owner probably doesn't feel like he trusts the GM enough to authorize whatever extra spending. Like, they didn't go after a Christian Walker or anybody like that to play first base. So instead you get a trade that no one's really that happy with because it feels like they overpaid. And then, as you're saying, almost every time you have, it's not so much like Skeens as an example of a guy who broke the right way, right? Like, you could say they could have drafted Dylan Cruz, who might still be good, but they'd be way behind where they are now. It's that any of the 50-50 guys, like, can we get this guy here and have it work? Can we get the best 5%, 5th percentile outcome, right? Or the 95th percentile outcome for that player? That happens way less frequently than, are we going to get like the 5th percentile outcome? That player is just really bad. If it's a guy who could break either way, it just does not break nearly enough in their favor, which is, again, part of the reason that they are in these straits here. I want to feel like there's more of a plan being executed. Do you feel like I'm off base to say that, though? It does not feel like they are in the midst of executing like a well-conceived, thought-out plan. That is probably my biggest gripe with them right now. I don't even care if it felt like a plan that I knew was a low-budget plan, like one where they were going to have to do everything right. It doesn't feel like there is a plan here. Hope our guys get better from last year. Hope the next wave of young guys, Chandler specifically, are just instant impact major league players. Pray no one gets hurt.
That's what it is. And it's count on your pitching. Because I'm not going to act like the pitching is bad, but injuries could stack up. You never have enough pitching, which we have seen by the, you know, the few moves they have made this offseason, adding a couple of guys. They needed to add a few to the bullpen, which was good, but they have to lean on the pitching. The problem is it is going to be difficult to win games that way, you know, winning 3-2 every single night, or 2-1, or 1-0. That's hard to ask for the guys that are throwing the ball.
93.7 The Fan, that's brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them, southhillskia.net. Vibe check on the Pirates. Opening day, 3 days away. They'll be playing baseball in Miami exactly 3 days from right now. They'll probably be around two outs, top of the first inning, something like that. I want a vibe check on the Pirates. Tomorrow is our big Feed the Need radiothon. Maybe not talking as much about the game and the series and the season leading up to it tomorrow. Wednesday, I'm sure we will. Thursday, it'll be a truncated PM team because you'll be hearing the game right here on The Fan. So we'll be on for an hour. So this kind of feels like a good day to take stock and take a bird's eye view of things. Get up to 30,000 feet about this team and try to come down with some drawn-out conclusions. I know they've lost our guy Chuck in Uniontown, who is the king of Pirates callers. Where are they at with you? 412-928-9370. There should be like palpable Buzz Williams, Donnie, for this team right now. I think that's something else I could say. There should be like a buzz surrounding them. There should be a lot of chatter. Oh, man, what are they going to do? And I just feel strongly that the offseason, and now Jared Jones being in limbo with his arm, has neutered a lot of that sentiment. We went around the outfield and tried to fill in the diamond, Donnie and I did. I said Sawinski maybe. They want Sawinski to win the job, obviously, over Pham, but they might still turn that into a pure platooning situation. O'Neill Cruz in center, Brian Reynolds in right, Ke'Bryan Hayes across the infield, IKF, Nick Gonzalez, and then depending on the handedness of the pitcher, a lefty, you might see Triolo, maybe Endy, maybe Adam Frazier gets some reps there, and then Joey Bart with Endy as the backup. I mean, be honest, Donnie. Take Skeens out of this lineup or this roster. No one's even considering them as a playoff team or even a fringe playoff team. It's a roster that on paper, given the massive numbers of question marks, can you name one guy, 1-8, so position player, not named Paul Skeens, that you sort of feel like you can just pencil in, yeah, that guy is going to have roughly this kind of year, and I can pretty much take that to the bank. I've got one.
I think Reynolds.
That's it.
He's like a steady Eddie.
Yes.
Which, like, it's not even
20.
He's like a very good player. He's not a superstar.
I feel like he's going to hit
like 25 homers.
280. He's going to get on base. He's going to have a good OPS. He's going to knock in 90 to 100 or thereabouts. You know, 85 to 100. He's going to hit 25 bombs. That, if you are a contender, I feel like you've got at least three of those guys in your lineup right now. Last year, 24 home runs, 88 knocked in. He had about 275. His OPS was a touch under 800. He's the only guy I feel like I can say that about with confidence. Let's go to Dave in Delmont as we try to get a vibe check on the Pirates 3 days before opening day. Hey, Dave.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, what's up?
You know, it just gets frustrating year after year that they do it on the cheap. And the problem is you have these people to call in and think, oh, yeah, I think the Pirates are going to have a good year. They have a chance of making the playoffs. It's year after year. And those are the people that the owners want to hear from, because those are the ones that are going to the games. And regardless whether they lose, by how many times they lose each year, they'll keep on going. And that's what the owners bank on, because they're not going to get a real baseball team. Thank you. Bye.
You can do more while being a smaller market, smaller payroll team than they did. Like, I can't just say stops and ends with the owner. and a willingness to spend. I don't think it does. I think that's a big component. But, man, you can do more than they did. Most small market teams do, in fact, do more than the Pirates did. And at no point have I gotten the sense that they are good enough at player development where they've had a couple of guys hit such that they feel like they can put in ink, like, hey, what we just said about Reynolds here. We have this player, we have this player, and we have this player, position players, everyday guys. And we know that we're getting, as much as you can know anything in baseball, we know that we're getting X, Y, and Z. We can put those in. They are not variables. They are constants. The Pirates have one constant in their lineup. I can't even say O'Neill Cruz is. I want to believe that he's just going to get better. But I can't say that in good conscience because I don't know, because they got him playing a brand new position that they just on the fly switched him to last year, which got him at least some reps, but it's still, you're supposed to be the field general of the outfield. There's a lot on the plate if you're that. OG caller to the fan. True OG. Robin North for sales. Hello, Rob.
Mosey, my man. We need to feed the need with some winning baseball, and unfortunately, I think it's going to be another year of that not happening. If it wasn't for Paul Skenes, I don't know where my fandom would be. They reeled me back in. I was looking forward to the rotation, and now we got the modern-day Jeff Locke, Bailey Falter. He has, like, nine lives. He's back. Haney and now Carmen Majinski,
yep.
Since Jones is questionable. And then you get into all the question marks in the outfield. Is Cruz the guy? Is Endy the guy?
Where ultimately are they going to, you know, slot Endy? He's the backup catcher right now. Like, you're right. They have a bunch of question marks. You would want a bunch of, if we're talking about punctuation here, you'd want a couple of periods, a couple of exclamation points. You can be a contender and have question marks, Rob, but you know where you generally want those question marks? Like middle relief. Like, get me from, you know, if my starter goes five innings, get me from the fifth inning. Thanks, Rob. Get me to the seventh inning where I have my seventh, eighth, ninth guys. I do not sense that. I think there are question marks all over this roster. I think it's fine to sell hope and sell the future when a team doesn't have anything to latch on to. I genuinely don't believe it's okay to sell hope and sell the idea of internal options making big turnarounds when you have the literal, and I want to stress this part, the literal best pitcher in baseball on your roster. I think like that probably should get driven home even more authoritatively. I'm not talking about this in the context of the Pirates have some pretty good pitchers or a pretty good pitcher, an all-star caliber pitcher. Paul Skenes is that dude, the best. If Paul Skenes is healthy the next 5 years, I'd bet on him to win at least three Cy Youngs. That's how good I think he is. That's the kind of talent you have. That is the frontline player. You can, in fact, build teams around guys that good. That they have built what I would call a very bad team around him is an astonishing indictment of pretty much every facet of the organization right now, but I would say the GM most of all. Where has the urgency been that has been spoken about so much? Where has the player development absent Skenes been? Was it really great praxis? Was it smart business to pin so many hopes on Jared Jones, a pretty smallish guy overall, especially when compared to other power pitchers, just staying healthy with kind of a max effort delivery? I would say no, and yet that's what they did. Ryan is on the fan. Hello, Ryan.
Yeah, Chris, I'm a big fan of you guys, but one of the things is, and I think a lot of people are fooled around here, Skenes is a great pitcher, don't get me wrong. He's not going to win the awards when his team can't produce runs for him. And that's the biggest issue that they have.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would tell you right now, straight away, my frustrations with what they haven't built around him are way more about position players than pitchers. Like, I just said they should have had a little more foresight about Jones just being a guy who looked like he might end up having arm problems sooner rather than later. And that they could have maybe insulated themselves more, but they still have Chandler coming up eventually. I just am at a complete loss as to how you could build a lineup right now that is this lacking in this many areas. Jared Triolo, if he were lucky and he had a season's worth of at-bats, Ryan, I think he might hit 15 home runs. And that's if he was running into a couple lucky ones. And that guy might be playing significant reps at first base for you, one of the two big power positions in the infield. Like, oh, and by the way, the other power position guy has a back that might go out at any time. Not great. So that's just, I don't know. I think Rob North Russell said it well. Fewer question marks, more definitive, you know, period, exclamation point. They had a chance. They had a lot of the hard part done for them in getting Skeens in the draft. They have not taken on the easier chunks of this. I mean, Donnie, did you take seriously the idea when Christian Walker's name was coming up in the offseason that they would be a player at all?
I thought that was a pipe dream.
That
would have been a move, like a jaw-dropping.
It would have been like, wow, okay, they're getting after it here. You know what I thought was going to happen was Rizzo, just because he's clearly over the hill. Like, yeah, he's no longer Anthony Rizzo. I thought, okay, that's what they're going
to
do.
And he used to batter them for so many years.
In a sense, like, yeah, and then he would have come here and been unable to, like, hit
six home runs, anything. With a short porch.
In theory, the Horwitz move, even though I thought it was an overpay, in theory it was at least interesting insofar as they brought, like, a promising bat, like a guy who led the all rookies in OBP. But any good vibes I was willing to give them or credit for that completely evaporated when we find out that Spencer Horwitz, and they knew it, had basic wrist issues that any team could have probably figured out. And they just said, let's go ahead and do it anyway.
That's the guy has to get healthy, and they have to hope he is good.
They have to hope he turns into a Brian Giles situation for them. They do. Rick on 93.7 The Fan. Hi, Rick.
Hey, pal. I don't know if you'll get this or not, but I think you will. Best thing Paul Skeens could have done for himself and the organization is refuse to play this year. To say, I'm not playing for the Pirates, thus forcing the hands that would have bummed the Pirate fans out. But if I'm his agent, I'd have laid it to the commissioner and say, you explain it. Tell you why this team has failed. Back when they built PNC Park, and I was there, okay, PNC Park was a quasi-public-private partnership. The agreement was, we're going to build you this beautiful ballpark. You're going to put a competitive team on the field. Instead, they brought Kevin McClatchy, told everybody he was the owner. He was never the owner. It was always the Nuttings. They should have filed a lawsuit. The politicians should have filed a lawsuit saying you didn't keep your agreement. You go to what's called deposition. In deposition, you can ask any question you want. That's where you want the Nuttings, because you want them to answer questions. Until you do it through litigation, you can't get those questions answered. Take them to court. They have to answer. You ask them any question you want, including, why are you taking this financial strategy? And why is this team lost so many
Rick,
years?
Rick, they can drive legally, I would think they could drive a truck through the loophole of just simply saying, we are trying to build a competitive team and put a competitive team on the field. It's just hard to do. I guess with the thought there be that there'd be a smoking gun where in deposition they'd say, we found out that you have text messages here saying we can't wait to not build a competitive team. That would not exist. Also, they could probably, if this lawsuit were filed today, what, Donnie, point to 3 years where I think they were the second winningest team in baseball in the regular season over a 3-year span. I mean, that's a competitive baseball team by definition. It's only 3 years, I get it, but they'd have some legs to stand on there. What was I supposed to get about that call, too? I don't really know. It's time for the Donnie Debrief, and it's brought to you by Boyd & Blair Vodka, proud sponsor of the Fan 15th anniversary. Donald, I'll cut right to the chase. Take it away.
The Debrief, March 24, 2025. This should be a fun one for us, Malzy, with Pony out today. Good Morning Football on NFL Network. They did a funny segment this morning. I guess they had Seth Rollins, the WWE superstar, join them this morning. So they did a segment comparing NFL players to WWE figures.
Okay.
So you'll like this first one. For Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis on the Eagles defensive line, they did the recently announced Wrestling Hall of Famers, the natural disasters.
Earthquake and Typhoon.
Comparison.
Is Rollins, I mean, a lot of these guys that get into the business are huge nerds for it as kids. There's not a lot of Dave Bautistas who just do it for money. So I assume Rollins is a big, like, history of wrestling nerd.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I mean, he came up through, like, the independent
circuit. So he would be very familiar with the work of one John Tenta.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. So I like that one to start with. Wait, was he Earthquake or Typhoon? He was Earthquake.
He was Earthquake.
See, you'd have to make Davis Earthquake here, but I feel like Tenta was the man in that tag team, and therefore you'd want to make Jalen Carter Earthquake, but Davis is bigger.
And then Typhoon was Fred Ottman.
Got news to me on that one.
Well, he had a less successful career than
Tenta was just a legend.
I mean, Tenta was even part of a crew during the Attitude Era. He was with the Oddities.
I would have been so nervous if I were Tenta watching those old, like, 80s videos of him doing the sit-down squash. He would get running hard and go into the ropes. I would have been petrified if I were him that those ropes, as loose as they had them, though, were just going to end up breaking. Can you imagine if he just goes hard into the ropes and they snap?
The story with him, too, he was sad when they wanted him to
hated
turn
being a
heel.
Bad guy.
He hated being a bad guy because the kids
were afraid of him.
Yeah,
and he wanted loved to be a fan. Yeah, he loved kids. He was apparently like the nicest guy ever. Very sad. Anyway, okay.
Okay, so we have two more. What do we think of this one? Micah Parsons as Rick Rude.
Did they elaborate on why?
They did a little bit. I didn't listen to a ton of it. I more so just saw who they made the comparison to.
I just love the Rick Rude promos where he'd be like, ladies, turn away from all those sloppy like pigs you're standing next to and come feast your eyes on what a real man looks like. You know what my favorite part of that always was, Donnie? Because he came up...
His tights.
Well, no, he straddled the era of like... People thought it was legitimate competition and real versus, like, obviously he was in DX.
Yeah.
The airbrush tights were very funny. But when they would have him doing, like, the gyrations, they would cut to the most early 90s-looking women in the crowd. And
like
they,
fanning themselves?
Oh, my God, dude. They're swooning. They're swooning like they're at a Frank Sinatra. The woman with her hair blown out, like, she's, like, playing with her blouse while Rick Rude's there. And apparently... Apparently he was like it was like a Tenta situation. He was reasonably on the straight and narrow kind of outside of wrestling.
I'm guessing the comparison here is that you have a pretty outspoken player, Parsons. I mean, the guy has his own podcast. He loves to get his word out there. He loves to complain.
DeMarcus Lawrence just clobbered him recently about like basically stop podcasting and start like playing harder.
But at the same time he does back it up with very good play. He is one of the best defensive players in the
football. I mean, I hope it doesn't turn out like Rick Rude's career did in this way. Rick Rude, back injuries, man. He was like another guy who was just... I was not going the direction you thought I was going there, trust me. He had a lot of bad back injuries before his very untimely passing, so I hope we see a guy like Parsons have, you know, your 12-year career or so at least, where he's height of his powers.
Also, the only guy to appear on an episode of Raw and WCW.
Which one
Nitro
did he have the mustache on, and which one did he not have the mustache on?
No, it was one of them. He had a beard,
and the other one he was clean shaven. Well, it'd have to be Raw that he had the beard then.
Yes, because it wasn't live back then.
Oh man, kids today will not understand. Now they've got like Kabali writing it up on the website. They've got it streaming on Netflix. I mean, the tape versus live, it basically decided the Monday Night Wars, Don.
It really did.
This is really just an excuse for you to talk wrestling in the debrief, and I appreciate it.
I thought it was, when I saw it pop up across the timeline, I thought it would be a funny one.
It's definitely
one to bring
up. When dad's away, the kids will play, or like a substitute teacher situation here, and I respect you for it. All right, who's the last one?
The last one I do think you'll enjoy, Vita Vea as Rikishi.
I was just going to say, there's no one else it could be but Rikishi.
He could have been Haku. A little bit too big, though, for Haku.
I thought Rikishi was a guy that if they had probably figured out a way to give him a little more personality. They tried the big heel move with him hitting Austin with the car, and that fell so flat that they basically just shoehorned Triple H into it, is what I read. Like, they stapled that on when they realized it was not going well.
He got thrown off the cell by Undertaker.
I'm right about that, though, right? Like, they thought Rikishi was just really going to be the driver, and then the feud was going so poorly that they had to just, like, make Triple H the mastermind so that they could get something out of it. That's what I heard years ago.
Yeah, they thought it was...
Because it was just bombing.
Yeah.
He was a dude I wouldn't have mind seeing wear the strap once. Get a decent title run in the early 2000s of a couple of months.
He was the guy, he couldn't quite crack through that Top Gear. Like, he was a trusty
He was an upper mid-card guy. He was an intercontinental champion type guy. That was his ceiling.
Yeah, a very fun tag team that he had with...
Wasn't Rick Root kind of a classic intercontinental title type guy? Like, never really was going to get, like, a... He was never going to be a threat to win the big strap?
Yeah, his era was a little bit different, though. I mean, there. Think of how many, like, notables you can think of, and there's so many that never had the big belt because it was true. Always Hogan.
That's not going to work for me, brother.
Yeah.
Rude was also, by the way, a legitimate tough guy who just beat Ultimate Warrior's ass backstage because Warrior tried to, like, mess with him in the ring and worked really, like, he
that guy was stiff as a board, they said.
Yeah, but he apparently just, like, warned him once, and Warrior just kept doing it. He just laid him out. Warrior's going to be, I know I'm speaking ill of the dead here, but who cares? He was a psycho. One of the worst guys ever in wrestling. Truly.
Yeah, he was not a favorite amongst the boys.
I mean, just
say.
A complete clown. The only thing I respect is that he basically had the guts to go to McMahon and just demand insane contract stuff that most people would never have the gumption to ask for, and he would get it.
And one of the few to go over on Hogan in the biggest moment.
Yeah, what does that say about him? Hogan must... I'll do what's good for business, brother.
He was really twisting that Hogan arm.
I respect this Donnie Football debrief, which was completely about pro wrestling. I do. I respect you for it. Thank you. I enjoyed that.